On this episode of the 8-Bit Files, we're going to talk about the Atari 2600 Plus. I've got my hands on one and I want to share my first thoughts. We're going to talk about the custom firmware that's now dropped for the GameStation Pro and why you might want to consider getting one of those if you don't already have one. And we're going to go down nostalgia lane a little bit and revisit the Sears Christmas Wish Book from our childhood. Let's get into it.
The 8-Bit Files with Dave and John.
I'm Dave.
And I'm John.
All right.
So, Dave, I just took possession of an Atari 2600 Plus. Once again, thanks to my friend Colin for the loaner. He bought it on launch day, like I did, and I canceled mine. And he, unfortunately, received his and then got COVID and he missed the return window. So he's stuck with it now. And he said, why don't you and Dave talk about it on the show? So
nice.
That's where we are at.
Unfortunate for him, but maybe fortunate for us.
So I wanted to sort of talk about the unboxing experience and sort of just my first impressions of it. I haven't spent a ton of time. You know, we're here in your video game cave.
Yes.
In person for an episode.
That's nice.
Or a segment at least. Yeah. And so it's been interesting sort of sharing this in person. We just had a rousing game of Warlords on it for the 2600, and it was quite fun.
Using 35, 40-year-old paddles.
Yes. Too. Yes. So the unboxing experience, it is everything a nostalgic nerd would want. I opened it up and there's the 2600 console itself is under a little clear plastic dome. And right away, like it looks exactly like the original 2600. And a small little box that had the joystick, the updated version of the CX-40. And it also came with the 10-in-1 cartridge, 2600 cartridge. And, you know, my initial thoughts were like the buttons and the levers mm-hmm. and everything else on the console itself felt like the originals. They felt stiff, but not too much. And they had the same kind of action. It just really felt like an original Atari in a lot of ways, just slightly smaller. And, but on the backside, it has a couple interesting things. One is obviously a USB-C port for power and also how you do the firmware upgrades. Right. It has an HDMI port, AB difficulty switches on the back, and then also a widescreen or a standard presentation for your console, which is a nice touch. The front of it has the fake wood grain.
Yes.
With the Atari logo that lights up, which is really nice and lets you know that the thing is actually on, which is cool.
The old one didn't have that, did it?
No. And there's a lot of people that have modified their old ones to add an LED.
Confession time. I left my original 2600, which I'm looking at right now. It's right beside or close to the 2600 Plus. I left it on for like a 3-day period when I went away somewhere.
Yeah.
And because I didn't know it was on.
I did the exact same thing. And I think it might have even been longer though, because it's in a part of my house that I don't go to that often. And it has I have to have a purpose to go there. And then I realized when I turned the TV on that it was still on.
Yes,
it was still in the little screensaver mode. So
That's right.
It's a common problem. So my initial thoughts were on the actual Atari itself, the console itself. It came with a USB cable and a HDMI cable. Because I was sort of borrowing this from my friend, although he may or may not ask for it back ever, I didn't end up using those cables. I ended up using my own cables for power and for HDMI, and I found that the ports were very stiff and very difficult to get in the cables that I have that work fine on everything else. Mm-hmm. So but that's also just maybe a new console-itis kind of problem. The other thing that was kind of interesting and the thing that really struck me was the 10-in-1 cartridge that it comes with. Mm-hmm. You don't get a menu to choose your games. You have to use dip switches that are on the back of the cartridge. On the front of the cartridge, it shows you this little menu of the 10 different games and the configuration of the dip switches. I imagine that's going to puzzle a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, Dave, we spent a lot of times messing around with dip switches on various computers and things like that. If you're not very tech savvy and you want to just get some nostalgia going,
yes,
this might be a little bit of a puzzling thing unless you watch a video or, you know, it does come with a little instruction pamphlet on how to use it and things like that. But it's not very clear.
Right.
And it's also kind of a clunky thing, too, especially for a modern day version of a classic, to having to literally turn off the machine, look at this diagram and figure out the configuration of these four switches so that you can play a different game from that era. So
how many, so as I'm sure 99.9999% of our audience knows that this particular console takes, at this time anyway, takes original cartridges to play games.
Yes.
Only original cartridges.
Nothing built in.
That's right.
So you have to have an original cartridge, which is why it comes with one.
Right. So how many did you try of your original cartridges?
I tried probably about four or five 2600 cartridges, and I happen to have a 7800 cartridge for Ball Blazer, which is also compatible with this system, which is actually a really nice feature.
It's neat that you kept that, really, too.
Yeah, well, it's one of my favorite games,
specifically
more so on the 8-bit computers, but I just happened to get this one in the box, although the box was quite beat up when I got it,
right,
and still is, but I still have the box. It is one of my favorite games, and it is really fun to play, especially with two humans, although you can play against the computer. The computer's just not that hard to beat. but it's a Lucasfilm game. It's super fun.
Yep.
And it's not part of any other major collections that I'm aware of. So it's cool that that I have that cartridge to try.
Have you been keeping your eye open at flea markets for cheap cartridges? I guess you've been borrowing this console for about a day now, so you haven't.
Yeah, it's only been about a day.
You haven't gone, but
I have a decent collection of 2600 cartridges.
Yeah,
I recently downsized my collection a little bit though, because I had a lot of duplicates, and so I put them up for auction, and I got a little bit of money for them, but not much, but. It's one of those things. So there's a couple games I probably wouldn't mind getting the original for that I don't currently have.
Yeah.
Although, weirdly, some of my favorite games, I have the Atari 8-bit computer version in cartridge form, in original cartridge form. So like things like Keystone Capers and Pitfall 2 and those types of things. But those are ones that I'd really like to get on the 2600 as well.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to pay eBay prices for them. It's just if I come across them.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Have you tried smashing the joystick on top of the console like we did back in the 80s out of frustration? I wonder how the new controller is going to hold up there.
I don't know. The new controller is very stiff and it seems very responsive. I had no problem playing any of the games with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was really neat to see. The only thing I would say that I feel is maybe missing from the 2600 is the 2600 plus, I should say, is some ability to do like scan lines or some other shader effect to minimize, because when you're plugging this into like a giant 4K TV, it can look like crap.
Yeah. Although Warlord still looked great. We just played
it. It did. Right? Yeah,
but I do agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So the other thing I did, is I took advantage of the beta firmware that's available for the 2600 plus, and I upgraded it. Now I didn't really notice any major difference because a lot of the cartridges I have work fine, with the original, and I was just sort of looking through sort of the change notes for the different firmwares.
Yeah.
And it sounds like for the most part, the firmware, the developers have been sort of addressing the compatibility issues with certain things,
right.
Certain games and things like that. Now we did try to play Warlords with original, like you said, 30 or 40-year-old paddles, and they were a little sketchy responsiveness.
It was.
And these were ones that you had cleaned and they work fine
on original
hardware. Yeah. So there might be something lost in the translation there with the emulation that's running.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did try my Harmony cart, which is known to not work unless you put it in developer mode and just load one ROM, which I haven't tried yet, but I will.
Do you know what's involved in doing that?
You just have to plug it into your computer and then you basically go and I think you just it's either a web app or an app you download that lets you set that. Basically, it just boots a specific ROM instead of giving you the menu.
You're just mounting the SD card, the memory card in your computer, right?
Is that
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's
the Harmony cart. That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So.
No, actually, no. I think you actually have to put the cart itself in developer mode because there is a USB port on the cart.
Oh, that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I should take a closer look. It's sitting right over there. You should try that. That might be an interesting thing to be able to do, just to load any ROM, a single ROM. I mean, obviously you have to jump through a couple of hoops to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I will say about the 2600 Plus, and maybe what the GameStation Pro got right, is, you know, people, I shouldn't make a generality, but for the most part, a lot of people are going to be plugging this into a TV that's probably mounted on a wall.
Yeah.
And their couch is quite far away, and the cord itself that it comes with is quite short. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my concerns. Is like this isn't like back in the day when we were kids, when we literally had it, the Atari plugged into the TV that was sitting, you know, 2 feet away from on the floor. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have to worry about the length of the joysticks and stuff like that.
Yep.
Plus also you have to deal with things like a longer HDMI cable and all this kind of stuff. Yep. So it would be nice if there was a longer cord or maybe an extension cord you can get for it so that people can sit on their couches and play these games properly. Because I will be honest, looking at these on a, what size TV do you have here?
It's like a 55, I think.
Yeah, and
like
I have the same at my house. Yeah. And some of these games look really bad up close.
Very bad. Yeah.
So, but even like I'm sitting about, I don't know, 7 or 8. Maybe 10 feet away from it now. It looks good. We're just looking at a sort of the screensaver mode for Kaboom, and it looks great. But the GSP, though, the nice thing about that, the GameStation Pro, is that it has wireless controllers.
Yeah.
So you can sit on your couch, or you can sit in another room maybe.
Okay, so you've how about your original Atari wireless controllers? Have you dragged those out? They should, in theory, they should work, shouldn't they?
They should. They should.
Double A battery.
I think it's, I think it was like with C's or D's or something you had to put into it.
Yeah,
I'll have to look at that.
That's a lot of Battery of the Month Club visits to Radio Shack.
That's right.
but you know, joking aside, it is, we're looking at my collection of joysticks here sitting on the floor. It's nice that you can just plug in, your joystick of choice too.
Yeah.
With a new device with a DB9 port on it. That scratches an itch for me anyway. I like that. I think that's pretty neat.
No, it definitely, and it's only going to get better as they get more compatible with the homebrews and sort of the late model games that have been released since.
Yes.
Even Atari's still coming out with new titles.
Yeah.
That presumably will be tested and working fine on it. With the firmware changes, but the firmware process itself, though, is a little involved to update. It currently only works on a Windows machine, and is really considered what I would consider to be more of like a developer level kind of upgrade. Like it's not for the squeamish, and it is a little bit involved, and you kind of have to do some crazy contortion work with
drivers and things.
Well, there's drivers, but also just booting up the machine in a certain mode. You have to basically plug the USB cable into the back of the 2600 Plus and then into your Windows machine. And then you have to hold down the game select option.
Yes.
And then power it on with it in black and white mode, which is hard to do with one hand while you're trying to like manage your computer at the same time.
Yep.
And that's just to put it into driver update mode.
Right. And then you gotta.
And then you have the firmware update, which is a different set of key combinations that you have to do. So that's, you know, it's a little clunky, and it's also a little nerve wracking too, because once you do finally get it into the mode where it recognizes everything. And I had some problems with my computer where it would recognize it and then it sort of dropped off.
Yes. Yeah.
And then so you have to start all over again.
Yep.
And then, you know, it does work, and I'm hoping that they'll have a more elegant solution for doing the firmware upgrades.
Yeah,
it's also kind of limited because it doesn't have an SD card slot.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing original cartridges. There's no save states. There's no there's no configuration setting saves or anything like that. So, but it's, you know, it's a pretty good analog to the original hardware that will work on your 55-inch TV.
So I wonder how big of a team they have, like working on, like actively working on the software, for example. Like, is it like a one-man show, or is it?
I don't know, but I do know that the at least a couple of the developers are active in the Atari Age forums, and they're the ones that have been posting these beta versions of the firmware, right. which is great. Right. You know, it's right. and they're listening to the community. The community also has all of these esoteric carts that it's yeah. impossible for Atari to have all of them.
Yeah,
especially this late in the cycle of Atari in its existence.
Yeah,
it's not like it's been one company for 40 years. It's mm-hmm. been multiple companies over the years. So
yeah,
so it's great to see that people are chiming in and posting their experiences with their unique cartridges or rarer cartridges, if you yeah. will. And then the developers are able to fix their problem. Because the interesting thing is a lot of these cartridges had extra chips on them.
Yeah.
They did things.
That's right.
And this 2600 Plus works by dumping that cartridge information into its own memory yeah, and running then, it from then, there.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a weird workaround about how it actually works. We also discovered that you can't unplug a cartridge and expect the game to continue playing mm-hmm. Because the cartridge has to be plugged in for it to continue to work.
Right. But in theory, like I know nothing about the engineering of this hardware or anything like that, but in theory, if Stella is the underlying emulator, then, shouldn't that guarantee at least the potential of compatibility with like in other words, like Stella, if Stella can't run a game, I can understand this device not running that particular game.
But, well, I think it's a couple things. One, it's the Stella version that it's running.
No, okay.
Because they're not running the latest okay. version of Stella.
Got it.
And this is also a custom version of Stella for this device. At least that's my understanding. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that. But also, too, it's also a limitation of the hardware and its ability to emulate these esoteric chips
right. yes.
that are sitting on these
yep.
some of these cartridges. So.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine some games will never become compatible in that case, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, yeah. But again, you know, I am impressed with it. I think yeah. it lives up to sort of the hype.
Yeah.
What I love is just how sturdy it feels and how similar it feels to the original hardware, which we both have,
yeah.
and to compare it against. It's a little bit smaller, a little bit fits better on the shelf.
Yep.
You've got quite a nice little collection on your shelf there of your original Xbox, your original Nintendo Entertainment System, 2600.
It fits, the 2600 Plus fits right in. Yeah. Like yeah. it blends right in. You'd never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks really neat. I think it looks fantastic. And, certainly to pick one up, I mean, it doesn't seem like... Is there inventory of these things still? Like, can you still buy one? Like, are they even for sale? I haven't looked lately.
Yeah, no, you can still get them on Amazon.
On Amazon, okay.
At least.
At full retail, the price has stayed the same, right?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And I imagine, I know, I think Atari.com has had a few little sales.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of a discount off of the price.
Right.
But for the most part, I think they're going to probably be in that same vein. Quite a different story for the GameStation Pro, which,
yes.
as we've talked about before, has been heavily discounted at a lot of retailers and or blown out through auction houses.
Currently watching four, was, are there four of them, John? Three or four?
Yeah,
there's $30 right now
yeah.
at auction.
Yeah. yeah, and so there's why don't we talk about that?
Yeah,
because sure. Because I think the other big kind of thing that's happened just recently is that a custom firmware has emerged
yep.
for the GameStation Pro, and it has a really neat sort of way that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Not unlike the 2600 Plus, it's still kind of an involved process to do the firmware update.
Yes.
And even the official firmware for the 26 or the GameStation Pro is a bit of a convoluted process yeah. to update.
Yeah.
But it's doable, and there's great tutorials out there on how to do that from My Arcade themselves and also from people like Gen X Grownup, John Reddick. He's done a great job of sort of documenting all these steps and processes yeah. and he's always on top of it all. So definitely check out his YouTube channel if you haven't already.
Yeah, I used his video to upgrade the firmware in mine. It was New Year's Day
yeah.
This year and followed his instruction. It was very clear, very good video.
Yeah.
Really. No, I love his enthusiasm towards the device too.
It's, yeah.
It's it's nice to see that.
It feels like we would have a beer with him, no problem.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So the crux of this, though, is the custom firmware. And what it does is kind of genius. Brad from the 80s on the Atari Age forums, he came up with this way. And apparently this is how, or similar to how he did it with the Atari Flashback 8 Gold edition that also has an SD card slot. And what he's done is he's basically created a custom firmware that is basically the original firmware, but it actually does a check upon boot to see if there's an SD card in the slot and if it has a specific file. And if it has that file, that triggers another script to run, which will essentially download all of the data from the data partition on the GameStation Pro onto your SD card. And what's magical about this is that it then gives you a perfect dump of what's there.
Yeah.
And every time subsequently that you boot the GameStation Pro with that SD card in there, it's not going to use the onboard copy of all the games and ROMs and
artwork and your data and all that.
And all that stuff. It's going to use the SD card version of it, which means you can go in and edit all the things that are on the SD card. You can add and remove games. You can customize the sort of the menu system. So you can get rid of the games you don't care about and put your own games in there, put in games that were never intended to be there. And also, it sounds like the possibility of even creating a completely new user interface is a possibility. It sounds like it's a lot of work to do, but it's possible. And so at this stage in the game, it's unknown as to how many games you can put in there. It is a little bit of a laborious process by having to add these games and add all the subsequent artwork so that it shows up properly in the menu system. But then it gives you the ability to then customize things that much more. And what it has been alluded to is with the Atari Flashback custom firmware, people made packs, so you didn't have to go and do all the work to source in size and scale and trim and do all the things you need to do to put all of the artwork in the right spot in the right format. So people are going to be creating little zip files. You download, you drop them into the right folders, and then it's basically going to expand the user interface to show you all the ROMs that you have. It's unclear at this point if there's a limitation to how many you can have in there before maybe you start seeing slowdown or maybe corruption. But in theory, like on my GSP, I have a 256 gig card and I'm only using not even 30 gigs of it with a lot of ROMs on there. So
You get, that's exciting to see, like you say, the potential of where that's heading. And I think, you know, when I played around with mine, I did feel that the user interface was, it was okay, right? It wasn't quite, maybe it was lacking a certain, like I can see potential to improve it, make it a bit more user-friendly and things like that for sure.
Well, for me, my benchmark has always been like Emulation Station and being able to browse and scroll through large lists of games very quickly.
Yeah.
Not have to like clunk.
Yeah, which is, you saw me trying to find Warlords earlier and it took me like half an hour. So but anyway, it's exciting. Like it's very, I mean, it, to be honest, it succeeded. The community is, you know, enthusiastic and very supportive of this device, which is, and maybe it exceeds my expectations a little bit in that regard. So that's exciting.
Well, and the other interesting aspect with this custom firmware is that because you basically have dumped the entire contents of the GSP to your SD card, that also opens up the door to change out some of the cores that are used in RetroArch and or even upgrading RetroArch that's there, because it's essentially you're just editing your own SD card. And the beauty of this is you can have this customized SD card full of stuff and you can just eject it and boot it up and then it's still just an original GSP. So you're not touching the original stuff and the functionality will still work. It's also interesting to note that perhaps some of these custom, or at least some of the firmware updates since when you got yours at Christmas, you had some lag issues. So you ultimately ended up returning it. And so we just tried a couple of the games that were problematic in the same room, in the same chair. Everything. And
it feels better.
It feels better. So it might be worth, well, I know you're trying to, you're now going to try to score one for, I've bought a couple of them now for $30 Canadian, which is insanely good for that. And then there's also the CES announcements of a number of new controllers that are going to be compatible with it as well. So
That's interesting. How have they been very specific about that yet? Like in terms of what those products are going to be looking like? Like,
there's some like Gen X grown up had, John has a video of him holding some of these things. So one of them is more like a traditional game pad, like with a D pad and buttons and stuff like that. And the paddle controller, you know, without the joystick. And then there's a few other different versions of it, including a portable version of the GSP.
Right.
Which is also interesting.
Very interesting.
So
it sounds like 2024 is going to be another fairly, you know, significant or interesting year for Atari fans.
I think so. And the nice thing is like these custom firmware changes opens the door to more compatibility with more different consoles beyond Atari as well. So, because I've already gotten, you know, all the Game Boy, pretty much all of the Nintendo handheld titles.
Yes.
On my GSP, the Nintendo Entertainment System, all of the Sega stuff up, not including the Dreamcast, unfortunately, just the Genesis and the Mega Drive and those variants, and TurboGrafx works. And, you know, so it's an exciting time for that. I mean, let's be honest though, I have probably 10 other ways to consume those same games. Right.
Of course.
So,
of course.
But as you mentioned, when I pulled it out of my, my bin of toys that I brought over today.
Yeah.
The GSP is nice and compact.
It's something you could put up on your, like have in your, even in your family room or your, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
And it looks nice. It looks attractive. And, you know, at our age, our friends, they all know what an Atari is, or at least a lot of our friends do, right?
Yeah.
And how much fun is it just to sit around and fire up Space Invaders or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and to do it accessibly, wirelessly, all that kind of thing, right? So to me, that's, I think it's worth just having one on that basis. And it actually reminds me a little bit of the PlayStation, like the PlayStation Mini, the PlayStation Mini. I have one of those.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that because it was sort of mixed. It got sort of mixed reviews at first and the price dropped. I bought one at Walmart, like retail at $30. They were blowing them out.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is like years ago. But the reason it kind of reminds me of that, it's because it was very easily extendable in terms of the firmware, in terms of like modding. It was like complete, and you just run everything off the SD card as well.
Yeah.
And you could customize the interface. You could do all those kinds of things. And it turned out to be something that people actually over time appreciated more and more. I think a lot of people have these things. It kind of reminds me a little bit of that.
Yeah.
In that it's a versatile, except there's an appeal with the wireless controllers that the GSP has.
Yeah, I just wish that it was more compatible, like with Bluetooth controllers. Like, I'd love to be able to use my Xbox controller with it, for example.
Yeah.
But you can use a wired Xbox controller, and you can use like 8-bit Do or any of those other controllers that can be plugged into USB.
Yep.
And so you'll have no lag issues, and you can have as long a cord as you need, probably, and it should just work. Where it gets a little clunky could be having to, or not being able to remap some of these buttons, which is something you could do fairly easily with other programs like Emulation Station,
right?
Even just MAME by itself, for example. So,
mm-hmm.
But I think that all that stuff will come, and it's been interesting to see how rapidly, and in real time, I've been sort of watching this custom firmware come out of the community.
Yes.
Specifically through the hard work of Brad from the 80s, and there's a couple other people that I can't think of their names at this point, that also were helping to troubleshoot and test and sort of find all these little almost Easter eggs of ways of exploiting the system. So Dave, I don't know how I came across this, but I ended up finding a website that has all of these really cool collections of the old nostalgic Christmas wish books from Sears, JCPenney, Montgomery Ward. They literally go back to like the 40s up until sometime in the 2000s, and it's sorted by year, and you can choose, you know, which seasonal catalog. So, you know, Sears had sort of like the spring and summer, then they had the fall and winter, and then they would have the Christmas one. The Christmas one was when everyone would get probably in mid to late fall to sort of plan out what they wanted to ask Santa.
Oh yeah.
For, right?
100%.
And so I went through and I pulled out a whole bunch of ones from basically from 1980 to 1984, roughly, sort of the progression of our nostalgia of everything from you know, the original Atari 2600 to the Commodore 64, the Atari 8-bit computers, some of the other different systems that were, you know, made available and the pricing at the time. And this particular site focuses mostly on the American versions of the catalogs. Right. The prices don't quite line up for us, but that's fine because it's weird dollars anyways because it's back in the day. But it also sort of highlights how much these things cost back then and maybe our parents' resistance to purchase these for us because of the costs. For something that was basically meant for entertainment purposes only. But what really struck me about this, it wasn't so much the consoles themselves or the computers, which was really cool to see, and also just how they marketed some of these devices, you know, with a multi-page spread. But what I really loved seeing is all the accessories.
Yeah.
All the stuff that, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that you and I love to talk about, and that's things like the joysticks and the controllers that you can get for all these different things, and seeing them in their sort of original state in a lineup with other competing products. But even things like the organizers for these consoles, the little fake wood grain boxes you could get with the clear domes to sort of dust protect your Atari and all your games and stuff like that. It's just really neat to see in sort of these things. And even some of the strange little things. There was this one thing that I found, and it was literally a rubber ball that looks not unlike a clown nose that you would put on the top of your Atari joystick to give you a ball top joystick. And it was like $3 for like four of them or something like that.
Can you 3D print one for me, John? It sounds like something like that. So I'm looking at some of the pages from the catalog that you saved for us to look at here. And I'm just looking at the Atari 800XL ad. What amuses me about it is, you know, basically you look at all this, it shows a really nice, you know, picture of the console on the top and description and all that kind of stuff. And then it shows a whole bunch of screenshots of games, like they look like actual screenshots from the console. And then in the bottom right hand corner, oh, by the way, you can get a word processor too. But it's like game. Oh, you can get a word processor. That's actually kind of awesome.
I can do my reports too.
Yeah, exactly. That just shows you what they were sort of targeting. And boy, the Donkey Kong, the ColecoVision.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. Look at those games. Look at those. Compare that to that's the 5200.
Well, it's interesting though. You just brought up an interesting point.
Yeah.
As you know, the original Atari had very small screenshots.
Yeah.
We get to the ColecoVision, it's a much larger, almost a half page screenshot.
Yeah.
Because it was just trying to highlight how much better it was.
Yeah. Maybe they had fewer games too, but no, you're right. Yeah. Though. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Like look at the perspective of like, there's a boxing game and base sports games. And then of course, Donkey Kong was the sort of killer app for that.
Yeah. Console. Cause it was fairly close to the arcade version, conversion. So, but yeah, if you're interested in checking this stuff out yourself, you can go to christmas.musetechnical.com and they have it all there. And it's a little interesting to navigate through. You have to sort of click on a year and then click on a specific year and company to see the catalog that you want. And then when it takes a while to load it all up because it's some kind of crazy database that they have. But then there's a search tool, and the search tool is really actually handy because you can literally type in like Atari or joystick or Commodore or whatever you're looking for, and it'll skim through like 1500 pages of the catalog and show you only the pages that where those things have been mentioned because they've OCR'd it so that they actually are aware of it. But just a fantastic fun thing. I also found when I was looking for Atari stuff in one of the earlier, I think it was 1981 Sears catalog, Sears Wish Book, is all of the other crap that they were selling that had nothing to do with the gaming itself, but like t-shirts and TV trays and lunch boxes and all this kind of stuff that had like your favorite Atari characters on it.
Oh, there you go.
Because all that stuff my mom bought for me.
Is that right?
I had one of the best Pac-Man collections ever.
That's cool.
When I was 10 or 11. So really cool stuff.
Wow. No, I could just spend hours and hours just going through these pages. It's awesome.
The other downside to this is you'll find stuff that you want to find and source now. Yeah. It's like, oh, I can afford this now. So
yeah.
Where can I get it? Or I came across a few things of bits of technology I'd never even seen before. Like somehow I missed it. Maybe it's this, the American versus Canadian version of these catalogs.
I think so. I wonder how much parity there was, or like similarity there was between, or symmetry between the US and the Canadian. Cause of course, like you, we studied every page of the Christmas Wish book.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, maybe I wasn't all that interested. I don't know. But.
Well, there's that too, because there's a lot, especially leading up to the Atari 2600 launch. There was a lot of handheld game consoles, or games, like single games, like very simple games. You know, and we've talked about like the Coleco arcade little boxes that are very coveted now. You know, the Pac-Man and the Donkey Kong and those types of things. But there's some other ones like bowling and other things like that that are just really simple LED type games, not unlike the electronic football that is one of your favorites.
Yeah.
And the baseball and stuff like that. But also sort of the dawn of the Game & Watch type games, like the little LCD screen games and little keychain things. It's say goodbye to a couple hours because, you know, you're welcome.
I just learned something here. Thanks to the 1981 Sears Christmas Wish Book, page 669. I didn't realize, of course, we all knew that Sears had the video arcade, like the Atari compatible, their Atari compatible, 2600 compatible machine. We all know that. It was just the relabeled.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that this looks like it is an Intellivision as well. This is... I didn't realize they added an Intellivision, like they rebranded the Intellivision as well. I have no idea.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different sort of clone systems that were branded by the whatever distributor that was doing it.
Because
they wanted to sort of get into that space.
It's so interesting. Like
And just being able to read all the descriptions and how they positioned this stuff back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is all before the internet, where you basically were making a buying decision based on a paragraph of text describing the gameplay or something else in the tiniest little thumbnail of the the game itself.
Well, if I interpret this one correctly, there's a family of three, mom and dad teaching their young kid how to play blackjack on the Atari. That's kind of
that's a good life skill.
Yeah, as a kid, and they're not even looking at the screen, but that's fine. But one of them, I don't know. No,
it's probably Ken Houston's blackjack on the Intellivision. There
is that what it is?
I think
is
so.
That,
yeah.
Is that it?
That was one of the more famous early celebrity endorsed games.
Look at this. Right, well, thanks for sharing that, John. Now thanks, and now, well, I shouldn't say thanks, I should say thanks for basically sending me down a rabbit hole that I'll be
well, there's another rabbit hole for the Canadians out there. There's a wishbookweb.com,
okay,
and it's basically a similar collection of some of these old catalogs with a lot of Canadian versions of them as well.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's, oh man, I want this football game.
I know. I know. I came across so many things in there, not even video game related stuff. I was like, oh, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
And I also remember coveting a lot of this stuff and knowing my parents would never buy it for me.
Yeah, of course.
Because some of these things were crazy expensive, especially in $1980, dollars, right? So it's just really interesting to see. And I've wasted so much time going down. The funny thing is I wasted a lot of time back in the day, because I would pore over these catalogs. We would fight over it.
Yeah, yeah.
And every once in a while, my mom would come home with two of them because me and my sister would have to share, because she knew that you're going to take it and you're going to pore through every single page and try to find something. That wraps up this episode. We hope you enjoyed our multiple trips down nostalgia lane and enjoy wasting a lot of time looking at Christmas wish books.
Awesome. All right, John. So we would love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us an email if you like. We are the8bitfiles@gmail.com, the8bitfiles@gmail.com. Certainly, if you have any Christmas or, well, catalog memories, if you will, studying these catalogs as a kid, or any other feedback around any of our topics, so we'd love to hear from you.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.